and welcome to the Public Lands Podcast. I'm Hadley Nellis, this week's guest reporter, and today we are getting outside and traveling to Wisconsin to talk to Eric Sherman about the Ice Age Trail Alliance.
My name's Eric Sherman. I'm the membership coordinator for the Ice Age Trail Alliance, and I've been on the staff of the Alliance for 14 years.
If you could give me a little background about like what the Ice Age Trail Alliance is and like what they do.
Our organization's founder, a man named Ray Zillmer, was an attorney and avid outdoors person who lived in the Milwaukee area. And in the first half of the last century, he came up with this idea of having a long-distance hiking trail in Wisconsin. And so he formed our organization, the Ice Age Trail Alliance, in 1958. And we've been working since then to develop the trail and get it to completion and eventually be a 1,200-mile hiking trail within Wisconsin.
And can you speak a little bit about how the Alliance maintains and builds sections of the trail?
Yeah. As far as maintenance goes, we have 20 volunteer chapters along the length of the trail, and those are volunteer-run, volunteer-powered. And so people involved with chapter activities are either out on their own doing trail maintenance or trail monitoring, or they get together for like weekend work outings. And then as far as construction of new trail segments, typically, but not exclusively, typically that's done through our mobile skills crew program, which is run out of our headquarters office and staff directed, and we typically do about 6 to 8 very large scale projects each trail building season, and those will have 100, 200 volunteers at a time over the course of a long weekend where we're focused on building new segments of the trail.
We were also able to discuss how the trail came to be, who helps maintain and build the trail, and the impact of maintaining sections of the Ice Age Trail on the communities that surround it.
So we, obviously it's a very long trail, and we need a lot of partnerships in order to build new sections and maintain the existing ones. So some of our key partners are the National Park Service, in that we are a national scenic trail, one of 11 national scenic trails. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources plays a key role. Private landowners play key roles. And then other local units of government, cities, towns, counties, all play key roles. But the idea of the trail was kind of the vision of a private citizen, and it's our organization has been kind of always member and volunteer based and led. And so for the most part, trail maintenance has been the Ice Age Trail Alliance has been kind of the main driver of that trail maintenance and building new trail segments. Yeah, as far as you know, when things fall off in a particular area in terms of maintenance of an existing trail segment, that can be a pretty big deal because, you know, you get, especially new people coming to try the trail for the first time, may have driven a long ways to get there and then show up and find that they're, especially if they're not ready for more of a primitive or, you know, backcountry type experience, and they're having to wade through blackberry brambles and things like that, that, you know, they're not going to go home and tell their friends what a great time they had, and that word of mouth is pretty detrimental. So yeah, it's always it's difficult because there are a lot of segments of the trail in areas where there's not a lot of people. So how do you find the people to take care of those segments on a regular basis? But it's always been a very, very high priority to make that happen.
What are some of the main challenges that the Ice Age Trail and public access trails like face?
I would say certainly in terms of looking ahead 10 years, 25 years, 50 years, 200 years, the Ice Age Trail is only half complete at this point. And so it's a very, very slow process, not through anybody's fault, but it's a very, very slow process to generate the funds to acquire new land for new trail segments as it becomes available. And of course, you need willing sellers as well, people who either want to continue to stay on their land but are happy to have the trail there in conjunction with however they're using the land. So ideally through like a permanent easement where we're allowed through there, and that's permanent protection. Or situations where a landowner is getting up in age, their children may not want the property, and so working with them to help them understand what the Ice Age Trail is and why it might be advantageous for them to help provide more land for new trail segments. So I'd say far and away that's the biggest challenge in terms of especially getting toward what we would call completion far off in the future.
Do you say that most landowners are like happy to work with you, or a lot of them kind of like unsure?
Yeah, I would say there are plenty of people who have land because it's important to them to feel like they have a corner of the earth that is theirs, you know, and that's not something to be dismissed. That's a understandable sentiment. And so I think there are always going to be people who are just like, you know, this is my land. I worked hard for this. You know, maybe it's a retirement project or something, or something I got just for hunting, and I really want this to be mine. And those might be the folks who you're never going to connect with. With others, it's maybe just a process of education in terms of explaining the number of people that would be hiking through there on a given day, given month, given year. Explaining that hikers, by and large, are very respectful of the land. They're not we're not a real rowdy bunch. A lot of it is just education. And then a lot of it is just a waiting game in terms of you might have someone on a particular property that we're hoping to get for the trail who is absolutely opposed, and then 50 years go by and they sell the property, and you find someone who's actually pretty excited about the trail. It's a long process.
In a future episode, we'll be talking to author Ken Ilgunis about the right to roam, the ability of citizens to walk through privately owned property, and how Americans have lost that right. Because the Ice Age Trail is so interconnected with the communities it goes through, I wanted to get Eric's perspective on the right to roam.
That's something that is a fairly new concept to me, but I certainly know that you hear that historically in Europe, for instance, private property, the concept of private property was drastically different than it has been in the United States, and therefore long-distance hiking trails from community to community were probably much more common than they have been here. And just the concept of the commons, you know, and that there's more land that's just available for wandering. Here, I would say that would be something we would need to tread very lightly with because the negotiations with private landowners are so, you know, they're of paramount importance and they're very sensitive. I think we would approach it more as we want people to roam on this prescribed path that we've developed and stay on it when you're crossing over private property. It's we definitely support the right to roam, but because the future of the trail is kind of at stake, it's also roaming in a very respectful fashion that we're, you know, promoting the concept of user responsibility to understand where you are and when you have to stay on the trail.
Why is the ability to walk the length of the Ice Age Trail something that residents and visitors to Wisconsin should value?
Well, it's there's a big change in people's interest in and awareness of going for a really long hike. So the first person to do the entire Ice Age Trail route was in 1979, and it took us 40 years to get from the first person to the 50th person. So it took that long to get to 50 people who had done the entire Ice Age Trail. And then in the last 10 years, now we're up to another 125, I believe. So the interest in doing that is really picking up. And I think it's important because people in Wisconsin have always had the ability to go for a 5-mile walk. You know, there's plenty of state parks, county parks, municipal parks very close by where you can do that any day of the year. But we have not had this, you know, notion of like, I'm shifting gears in my career, I've got some time between this thing and the next thing, or my children have left the house, I need a new challenge, or I'm retired and, you know, what's some bucket list kind of thing I could take on. This is like the perfect thing, which offers something much different than like, oh, I'm going to go up to Devil's Lake and do like, I'm going to get my 1,000 miles by doing like 50 laps of this trail. You know, it's a much different experience. So, yeah, and I think a lot of people are discouraged from the Ice Age Trail because of the fact it's half complete. So if you had a month, there's no way around the fact that in that month you would be walking along a lot of quiet country roads. And that's, you know, not necessarily the first thing people think of when they're excited to take 1 month to go hiking. You know, you're probably wanting to be in the woods, away from people, away from communities for that time, which is totally understandable. But it's pretty cool that people who do long stretches of the Ice Age Trail actually wind up finding those road walks to be surprisingly enjoyable. So.
There's something about the Ice Age Trail that is very appealing because it's very easily accessible.
Yeah, part of that is by circumstance in that Wisconsin is not Wyoming or New Mexico or Oregon or Washington State, you know, these places that there's a lot of public land, a lot of remote, wild, forested land. Wisconsin is just not that. So you put a 1,000-mile trail anywhere in the state, it's not going to be strictly wilderness. Part of that was by circumstance. Part of that is by design as well. Our organization's founder was very keen on accessible recreation for everyone and wanted a trail in Wisconsin so that people didn't have to go to Yellowstone, you know, to get their excitement. And so not only staying locally, but then also not having to go far locally. And so that's why the trail is now and always will be routed through communities, not far from Madison, right through Janesville, right through West Bend, right through Sturgeon Bay, so on and so forth. So yeah, it's important that people might hike it and not even realize that, oh my gosh, this thing goes, you know, 500 miles in either direction, but it is just right there. It's right out your back door.
I grew up not far from the Ice Age Trail, so I decided to go back to my childhood home and hike a section of it. Alright, made it to the section of the trail that was by the house I grew up in. I kind of forgot how pretty it is out here. Right now I'm walking in a meadowy area. The path is very wide and covered in snow. this portion of the trail cuts through a prairie restoration area. A lot of people walk their dogs on portions of the Ice Age Trail, so you can always see dog footprints. I think the best part of this portion of the trail is how easy it was to get to it. I parked on the street, walked over a little hill, and I'm already there. Part of what makes the Ice Age Trail so great is how accessible it is. How do you guys get interested in the trail, and how does becoming involved with your organization benefit their lives?
Yeah, our starting, I would say within the past 10 years, we've had a big dramatic change in our engagement with youth. It started with an elementary school teacher in a nearby community here who basically had the idea of trying to replace classroom time in summer school with outdoor time. And, you know, of course, there's a lot of research these days on the benefits of being in nature for children in particular. So that was the start of what was called the Saunters program, what is called the Saunters program. And it's grown from there in terms of school districts around the state partnering with our organization and our local volunteers to basically get kids outside as much as possible. Recently, we received a significant grant from the National Park Foundation to try and get 10,000 fourth graders out onto the Ice Age Trail this year, which is thrilling and terrifying, because it's like that's a lot of kids, you know, that we're trying to work with to get out there. But things like that, you know, are really moving in the right direction with youth engagement. And we have a few examples here and there of people who were so touched by that experience of being in that program that, you know, they're off on they're still very young, but off on what appears to be the path of, like, they're going to be working in the natural resources management field someday, or, you know, something like that. But I think on the whole, it's basically just the more experiences kids have, this is making the world a better place, basically, is what it boils down to. And so we're just really proud to be able to be part of this machine that is, you know, working hard to get kids out in nature and experiencing what that means to their minds and their bodies.
You guys also have other volunteering opportunities. Can you talk a little bit about what they are and how they affect the communities?
Yeah, so like I said, we have 20 volunteer chapters along the route of the trail. And those kinds of activities are going on kind of a smaller scale year-round, and that's kind of the foundation of our work. And from there, a lot of times, people who have done that for a year or two feel the confidence to take on some trail maintenance activities just on their own, you know, say during the week, where you're going to check out one of our mowers and go out and actually mow the trail, things like that. And then the other main avenue for on-trail volunteering is through our mobile skills crew program. And as I mentioned, that's where there's only 6 to 8 of them throughout the course of the trail building season, and they're in essentially random locations from year to year, you know, what area needs attention or where is there opportunity. So for those, you might travel a little bit, and they're typically over the course of a long weekend. And to encourage people to come from near and far, we offer free meals the whole time you're there. And if you'd like to stay for multiple days, we offer free camping as well. So those two things right away, let alone the trail work, sets things up to develop a really nice sense of fun and camaraderie, sharing meals and sharing a camping area and campfires and things like that. For all of this stuff, there's no experience necessary. Whatever you bring to the table, we want to find a way to give you some meaningful work that you can feel good about. And in terms of the influence on the community, it's like, you know, there's a lot of research right now that shows if you have a meaning in your life that's beyond yourself, that that's critical to your well-being, and especially as you get older. The impact of our volunteering in terms of the number of people doing it, the hours contributed, which has been over 80,000 hours per year in recent years, that's one thing, but it's really the effect on individual lives is pretty profound as well. And I think that's why people keep coming back year after year.
How does the influx of visitors to the state impact local communities?
Well, it's difficult to quantify just because there are so many trail segments around the state that don't have an entry station, you know, where you have to stop and pay a fee, for instance. But we did partner with the Wisconsin Department of Tourism and University of Wisconsin-Whitewater a few years back, and ran a pretty thorough survey and study. And the estimate there was 1.2 million users of the Ice Age Trail each year, and a pretty substantial economic impact to local communities along with that. So we definitely feel like there is an economic side of things where the trail is, we're no slouch in that regard either. And you know, we feel pretty proud that people want to use the trail, and that has a pretty substantial economic impact on the communities that the trail is passing through.
Are there other organizations similar to the Ice Age Trail Alliance around the country, and do they face the same issues as you guys do?
Yeah, so there's 11 national scenic trails, and I'm pretty sure each of those trails has a nonprofit partner, and then typically like a federal partner, such as the National Park Service or the U.S. Forest Service. Yeah, I feel like it's a good time to be in the long-distance hiking trail community overall, but it's not universally smooth sailing, and other organizations similar to ours, partner organizations, have had significant challenges, as have we in past decades. So we're kind of all in it together, and there are a lot of opportunities for collaboration. We have what's called the Partnership for the National Trail System. It's kind of this umbrella organization that helps us work together.
What is your favorite section of the trail to hike?
I've got a lot of different ones. It's hard to pick. I feel like these days, any place that I'm on the trail with my kids, it's just really cool to see them. Often they're grumpy right at the start, but then you get them on the trail, and then just a few steps up the trail, and then there's just this innate draw to continuing forward. When you have this corridor ahead of you and you can't see around the next bend, it seems like impossible to resist moving on to the next thing. One story I've been thinking a lot about lately is that I took my older daughter out for a hike. She was maybe 3 or 4 at the time, at a local trail segment, and I had this great hike with my daughter, although she did, after like maybe half a mile, ask to be picked up and carried. And I assumed, because it was my child, that she would want to walk 5 miles on her own, you know, but it didn't work out that way. But I took a really good picture of her that day that wound up in one of our guidebooks. Yeah, I was really proud of it. It was just this very, my daughter, I kind of coaxed her into running down the trail so I could get a good picture, you know. But I caught her in this moment of real happiness and joy, and I was so proud of this picture. And I showed it to my wife, and she said, "Oh, you put Pearl's pants on backwards, I see." I didn't catch the fact that I had to dress my daughter and put her pants on backwards. But so, I mean, that's what ultimately it winds up being, is not so much the experience you had that day, but the memories that stick with you.
So. How can our listeners get involved with the Ice Age Trail Alliance?
Go to our website or give us a call, and we can put you in touch with a local volunteer coordinator, or we can explain, tell you more about upcoming events, things like that. If you otherwise haven't found something on the website that, you know, you're clearly feeling good about trying out. So yeah, either check us out online or give us a call, and we'd be thrilled to get you pointed in the right direction to start helping out.
That's it for this week's podcast. Be sure to tune in next week to learn about the right to roam and check out the Ice Age Trail Alliance and other organizations like it. Meanwhile, we hope that you get out and enjoy a public park, lake, stream, or trail near you.